everybody. Welcome to the NFL Roadshow. 16 days away from the draft now, and we're pretty much done with pro days. We do have a couple of quarterbacks hitting the field again in the next few weeks. Justin Fields going through his second pro day on Wednesday, Trey Lance next Monday, and the Niners will be at both, according to Ian Rappaport. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch both scheduled to attend and to keep us guessing. Also headed to Ohio State to watch Fields, a Patriots contingent. Though we don't know exactly who will be going as of right now from that team. Albert Breer says that Josh McDaniels might be the guy going to represent them, but we'll find out. Obviously, a lot of talk linking Fields and the Patriots right now. Peter Schrager had them trading up to get him at 4 in his latest mock. And remember, Patriots did not send Belichick or McDaniels to his last pro day. They went to Alabama to watch Mac Jones that day instead. And speaking of Mac Jones in Alabama, did you hear what Nick Saban said last week? That he stood right next to Shanahan and Lynch while Jones was working out, expecting that they would want to pepper him with questions about his quarterback, only to have them literally not ask him a single thing. I think it's super weird. Even if they have no intention of drafting him, so if that's the case, and they just finished saying the day before that they didn't have to hide anymore, why would they go through the trouble of going to a pro day just to fake us all out? And even then, why wouldn't they ask some questions just to collect information on a guy they might have to face someday? Wouldn't you want to take advantage of the perspective of his coach, biased as it may be? There are ways to phrase questions so that you can still get some information that you want to know, make sure that it is less biased, maybe. And I can't imagine being in the position to just not want to know anything. And then Lane Kiffin went on the Pat McAfee show, and he essentially said that that is like par for the course, that he is rarely contacted by NFL people about prospects, except by Belichick. He mentioned him as a guy that always reaches out, even about lower round guys. But then I reached out to a different college coach and asked him if this was really true, and he said he does hear from NFL guys about his prospects. So I don't know. I think the whole thing's really interesting, though, and I'm curious to hear what my guest today thinks about it. His name is Jim Nagy, and he is as knowledgeable a person as you're going to find about the draft prospects in this year's class, or any year's class, frankly, because he literally scouts them year-round as his job. He is the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. He's in charge of deciding which players get invitations to that game, so that obviously involves a ton of tape evaluation and information gathering. And then he also works for ESPN as a draft analyst, so you've probably seen him on your TV in that capacity as well. All of this, by the way, after spending 18 years as an NFL scout for teams like the Packers and the Seahawks and the Patriots. So he's got a wealth of knowledge, and I am excited about the opportunity to tap into it. So let's go ahead and break the huddle. Jim Nagy. Different from Matt Nagy, who you are not related to. How often is that a question that you get?
It comes up. Yeah, it's it's very it's a very uncommon name here in the States, but in Hungary, our native land, it's the most common surname in Hungary.
No!
So yes, it's like Smith over there. So I think we both have East Coast roots. My grandfather was from New Jersey, and we had a short stopover together. I was on my way out of Kansas City in 2012 draft, and he was coming in with Andy Reid. So we worked together for about 3 months leading into the draft, and then I took off and went to Seattle. So, that question comes up a lot.
That's so funny. And you guys pronounce it differently.
I guess. I mean, I hear Matt's name. I hear Nagy. I can't keep it all straight.
Answer to them all. Well, before we get into the weeds about this year's draft prospects, I just want to thank you for all of your hard work consolidating pro day numbers and information on your Twitter feed, because that stuff is usually all over the place. Also, where were you when I was a reporter out at pro days looking to get this information? Because usually, as you well know, there's that scout huddle where the information is given out that those of us in the media are not allowed on the inside of. So I'd have to like chase down some scouts on the down low later and be like, what numbers did you have?
Yeah. It was, it goes back to when I was scouting, Gil Brandt always did it, and Gil always would post something on NFL.com every night. And it wasn't always all the numbers, but when you're scouting in one particular part of the country, you're always curious to like how some of the other guys around the country were working out. And without any combine this year, we just kind of saw a space where we could help out. And so we were the Senior Bowl scouts. We were at a bunch of the pro days. I wasn't at a ton myself, but we had guys. And then it was really connecting with buddies around the league on a daily basis. Hey, where are you going to be? Are you going to be here? Are you going to be there? Can you shoot me these numbers as soon as you get them? But it was a little hectic. I don't plan on doing it again next year when the combine is back. I might, but it ended up being more work than I thought it was going to become. a lot of data entry on a phone. Like that's not always the most fun thing, but,
You're like an investigative reporter.
I don't know. I felt like Charles Robinson at the combine, you know, he always posts the combine number somehow. So, but no, it was great. It was fun. It kept us, you know, kind of created content for us throughout March.
So you mentioned the lack of a combine. COVID's obviously changed a lot of things with regard to the scouting process. How, in your opinion, has it changed the evaluation process the most for teams?
For teams, it's more affecting them on the background part. The tape is the tape. They actually had more time to watch tape this year than any other year because you're not wasting drive time. You know, usually you're in Tuscaloosa and you got that 3.5-4 hour drive to Auburn. I mean, that's a lot of tape that you could be watching. So they were fine on that part. It was the background stuff. And the schools were great about setting up Zoom calls with all the different sources at the school. And they were very gracious with our staff. And we were on a bunch of those, you know, the majority of those Zoom calls. But it's human nature, right? You get one-on-one setting, you're probably going to be a little more forthcoming than if you're on a Zoom with 80 different scouts. So, you know, what they're doing right now is playing catch up. You know, you're really trying to get to these pro days and pull these assistant coaches that you would have had the chance to walk down the hallway, you know, in September and talk to. Now this is your first opportunity at the pro day to connect and really try to get the nitty gritty on these players.
So everything you just said is the reason that what Nick Saban said last week about the 49ers not asking him any questions about Mac Jones was so shocking to me. Because I just don't understand under any circumstance, whether you're interested, not interested, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to pick the brain of everyone who's been around somebody, whether you have a serious intention of drafting or not, because they're going to be in the league and you're just doing due diligence on scouting your future opponent, perhaps. What was your take on that?
Okay, here's what I'll say. Head coaches are the worst sources you can possibly have.
Why? For
a couple of reasons. One, as a scout, when you go into the school, you always find the head coach and you thank him for letting you in the building that day. It's his building. He lets you in. You should be gracious that they did that. But the head coaches are the ones that go into these living rooms during recruiting and promise the mom or the dad or the aunt or the uncle that I'm going to take care of your boy. I'm going to, you know, grow him into a man. I'm going to look out for his best interests. Well, so you really can't go back and say anything negative at that point. In my opinion, if you can't go say anything negative about a player if you're really the protector for that player.
Would it get out?
I don't think you would ever put a head coach in that situation where he would have to dish dirt on one of his players. That's for the staff. That's for you should be able to find those answers without going straight to the head coach. That, again, that's coordinator. There's so many levels. That's coordinator. That's position coach. That's why you have all the different sourcing is because they all see the player through a different lens. So if you want to talk about the football part, position coach, coordinator, always big. GAs are great sources for younger scouts because they're the same age and nobody really, you know, those guys don't get talked to a lot. So they're always eager to kind of share what they think about these players. And then all the way down to the equipment staff, to the people in the lunchroom. I mean, the sourcing continues, but to me, it sounds weird. But head coaches to me are the worst sources because they have made that pledge to the family.
Okay, that makes sense to me. So maybe we shouldn't read into that as much as we're reading into everything these days.
That's what we do.
This quarterback class in particular is generating so many opinions. What do you make of the heated analysis debate that we're having around this year's prospects at that position?
Yeah, it's gotten a little gross, in my opinion, Lindsay. Like, I almost want to pull away from it. I mean, there's some vitriol this year for some reason that I haven't really sensed in other years. It's like you're like pro Mac Jones or you're pro Justin Fields. And if you're either one, you hate the other guy. And it's so polarizing and divided. And maybe that's just the nature of the social media beast that we all kind of live on these days. But I mean, there's five good quarterbacks in this guy. There's more than five, but the five that are being talked about at the top between Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance. I mean, those guys are all, they all have things that you can really, really like and sell the player. So I don't know why we've kind of gone down this road this year where it seems more, I don't know, just a little more gross than in a normal year. But these guys, all five of these guys are going to go pretty quick.
How quick? When do you think the fifth quarterback comes off the board?
Somewhere around that 10 spot, you know, but if it's, I still think Carolina's in play. I really do. I don't think the Sam Darnold trade, you know, took them out of it. And then you've got Detroit in that mix. And then you got teams like New England and maybe the Saints, maybe moving up. So there's teams that could move. We see it every year. Denver might be in the mix. I don't know. I'm still a Drew Lock supporter there. The book's still out. I mean, again, with the quarterbacks, like you talk about the quarterbacks in the league. Justin Herbert kind of blew it out of the water last year, and Joe Burrow, we were in this COVID year and those guys knocked it out of the park, but that was really a weird year, you know? So a lot of these young quarterbacks, that wasn't a normal year. Like, I think Tua is being unjustly criticized right now and everyone expects like this rapid acceleration, but yeah, I think it's going to be somewhere around that top 10. I don't see him getting to the 20s. I don't see that fifth guy getting out of the teens.
So maybe like the Broncos could stay pat and still get a quarterback potentially? Because I was thinking maybe that might be a team that might have to move up a little bit in order to guarantee that they get the guy that they want if they actually, you know, want to walk away with a quarterback in this year's draft.
And I think you'll see some teams be aggressive to do that, like San Francisco did. That was the ultimate aggressive move, to move up and get the guy. I mean, they know who they want, right? Like, they're going all the pro days right now, but they didn't move up for that spot. They moved up for a particular player. So only they know. I think that even the 49ers, I think right now they're closing ranks a little bit. I mean, that's a great scouting department. John Lynch does a great job and they're really open with their scouts. Guys like working there. But I think in a case like this, even they're probably closing ranks a little bit to keep that pretty close to the vest and what they want to do.
Why would they keep it close to the vest? Like he said in his own press conference, he doesn't have to hide anymore now that he's up at three, especially since everybody thinks that they know who's going one and two. So if one and two are set, then you could even set number three. It doesn't matter.
Well, it depends on if it gets out there who they really want, you know, then it could affect it. They could still trade out of the spot. That's the thing. They traded up there, but they could trade out. They might end up getting more. You know, the more teams sit and talk about this quarterback thing. Yeah. They could trade back out of that spot if they get a big enough offer. So that's why I think that they're still being close-lipped about it, or else they would be coming out and sending more out. I just think everyone jumped on Mac Jones right away. And I don't know if that's going to happen. I think John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and maybe Adam Peters and a couple other guys are the ones that know what's really going to happen.
Who do you think makes the most sense there for them?
You know, you try to connect the dots on what Kyle's played with in the past, whether it's Matt Schaub or Matt Ryan or Kirk Cousins or Jimmy G, and Mac makes sense there. You don't have to be a tremendous athlete to run that offense. They just do such a good job of marrying up that wide stretch run game and then the play action, but you don't have to be a great athlete. But maybe Kyle wants more. Maybe he sees a guy like Justin Fields or Trey Lance, and when you get those guys out on the perimeter, maybe you have a run threat. So again, I can't get in Kyle's mind, but to me, all three would work. All three, you know, are guys that you could find enough attractive about to take at that third pick.
You tweeted out last week that you would be surprised if the Panthers' decision to trade for Sam Darnold didn't have something to do with the Niners targeting Mac Jones. What did you mean by that?
Well, Carolina had Mac Jones here for the week down in Mobile, and he did a great job for me. So smart. I think Mac's one of those guys, the more you're around him, the more you like him, you the more you feel the leadership and just the confidence in the guy. And he's, when I say smart, like, it's one thing just to call a guy smart, but he's like off the chart smart. And he's got this crazy work ethic. There was a couple nights that you've been down to Mobile a bunch, Lindsay. You know, the players meet till late at night, and we found Mac across the street at the convention center in the team meeting rooms after midnight twice, just sitting there by himself, taking notes of practice. And he wasn't doing that for show. Like, he did not know anyone was going to come around and do that. And that's why we always used to talk about it in places that I scouted. Like, true character is you do things when people aren't looking. You know, that's really who you are. And so Max got this old gym rat, like old school gym rat to him. And then he gets on the field and you see the smart. So he's not just intelligent in the room. He goes on the field and he makes, you know, such quick decisions and good decisions. So that makes sense that Carolina would have maybe you know, really liked him coming out of the week with him. So I don't know. I just feel like they felt like they couldn't get the guy they wanted, so they went and took Sam.
What do you think about the Patriots possibly moving up for a quarterback? You have worked in that organization. Does that sound like something that they would consider doing?
It's hard to call with the quarterback because they had the same one for 20 years. So you don't really know.
Right. They weren't in the position to do this. So who knows, right?
Right. They've never been this close. They're usually drafting somewhere well into the 20s. So they're never within striking distance. And that's what makes it a weird year. You've got five good ones. And do they make that jump up this year? And they have the draft capital. So it's going to be interesting. You know, they've done a great job in free agency, really supplementing that roster. And then they're getting all these COVID guys back. So they're set up to win. To me, if they go up and get one, he might not even be the starter next year. That's why Trey Lance might be a great guy. You know, I think if you talk to people around Trey, it might be best for him to sit for a year, because that's a huge jump from FCS 17 starts to be in the face of the New England Patriots. But that could be an ideal situation for a guy like Trey. Or you could see him moving back. I mean, there's some guys being – the buzz is starting right now about this group of guys moving in into the late first for teams to get that fifth-year option on a quarterback. So maybe you could see Bill moving back and picking up more picks.
My brother and I literally just had a fight before I sat down to tape this about whether you should trade up to get a quarterback ever, unless it's the number one guy, because his thought was that if the guy is there – and he comes to you, then that's smart. Otherwise, it's so hit or miss. My argument was, if you love him, then go get him, because everybody desperately needs a quarterback. What is your take on when it is the right move? Because you never want to make a move out of desperation, right? Just because you need a quarterback, go get a quarterback. Use too much draft capital maybe to do that. How do you strategically do this in a way that feels like it's right for the organization, but also fits your need?
You have to have really strong conviction across the entire operation. I mean, the coaches, the front office, everyone's got to be on board with the player. And this is a hard year to do that. We talked about like the information gathering and getting to know these players. There hasn't been a lot of face-to-face. There's been a lot of Zoom stuff. And I know, just talking to friends around the league, like, they're okay. Like, they're getting some stuff out of these Zoom calls, but it can't replicate what you get in a normal year. You know, they're usually spending significant amount of time with these quarterbacks, you know, on 30 visits at the pro day. I mean, you can really exhaust yourself with these quarterbacks, and most teams do. And this is just a year they're not able to do that. So I would be surprised if a team got that aggressive and had to give up that much to go from where they're at in the middle of the first all the way up to get one of these guys. If it's Denver and you only got to go up a spot or two, maybe. But that's an aggressive move in a year where you might not feel like you know the player well enough.
Does it need to be your favorite quarterback in this year's draft? Or if it's like, oh, he's going to be the fourth quarterback off the board and we also like him, let's go get him. Does that feel like the wrong way to make a decision if you have him graded out as the fourth best quarterback in this year's draft?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the top guy. It just needs to be a guy that you're, like I said, truly convicted about and comfortable with. And so much of playing quarterback and being the quarterback is more than what you see on the tape. It's like, again, that's the easier part. The easier part is that part. The harder part is figuring out the guy. And it's hard to do that when you can't spend time with him. And like I said, a lot of schools sugarcoat that quarterback position. You know, let's face it. You know, even when you have really good contacts at a school, it helps them in further recruiting, getting good quarterbacks when they're sending guys to the league every year. And so that will happen. It's happened to me before. I got burned as a young scout on a couple quarterbacks that at the school, they really sugarcoated what the guy was. And then, you know, I reaching out to buddies that work at the team that drafted him. And they're like, man, he's nothing like they said he was going to be. And that's alarming. So the teams right now, that you really gotta be confident in your sources at the school are giving you the right information.
How about the guys outside the top five at quarterback? Who are some of the options that teams could wait on and still potentially get an eventual starter?
Yeah, it's an interesting mix. I think there's really three right now, and that would be Kellen Mond from Texas A&M, who won the Senior Bowl MVP down here. Davis Mills from Stanford is a hot name around the league right now as well. I don't think he makes it out of the top 50. And then you got Kyle Trask, and they all have different strengths and weaknesses. But again, you're talking about that fifth year option year for the quarterback. So that's why you could see someone trade back or trade back in. I just know, like in my time in Seattle, I remember we were on the clock years ago And we had John Elway calling and Jerry Jones calling for our pick. And it ended up being Paxton Lynch to Denver. John Schneider made the trade with Denver. And famously, Dallas got their plan B and they got Dak Prescott in the third round of that draft. But that happens a lot. We've seen we've seen Baltimore jump back in for Lamar. We've seen Minnesota jump back in for Teddy Bridgewater. So it happens. I could definitely see a team jumping back in or someone there late like the Saints taking one of those three guys.
Okay, so all this quarterback talk driving really all of the draft talk this offseason. But what I think is super interesting is that you go, once you go out of the quarterback mix, then you go maybe if the Falcons, you know, don't want to take a quarterback or they don't want to trade out of the spot. And then it becomes like a best player available, right? So then there's the question about who you evaluate as the best player available. Who in your mind is the best non-quarterback available in this year's draft?
I would say Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida, for a couple reasons. One, he's a freak, and people throw the word freak around way too loosely. This guy's truly freaky when you just put his numbers up and his tape and production against other tight ends. I mean, I think since Vernon Davis is the last one that has done anything like this guy testing-wise. But then you also have to look at the position. There is a greater shelf, you know, in terms of drop-off between Kyle and the next tight end than any other position in the draft. So, you know, if you're Cincinnati, for example, and you could take Kyle Pitts there, or one of the offensive linemen, Penei Sewell from Oregon, or Rashawn Slater from Northwestern. I mean, to me, you go with the tight end because it's an incredibly deep offensive line draft, including at tackle. It's a really deep tackle draft. And same thing at wideout. If you're trying to go Kyle Pitts or Jamar Chase, I mean, you're going to get a good receiver in the second or third round. You can get a starter into the third round this year. So why wouldn't you rather have Kyle Pitts and then a receiver in round two or three, rather than a receiver and, you know, one of the down the line tight ends? So this is the strategy part of the draft right now that all the teams are working through. It's not about the evaluation. That part's been done. It's where do we have to go get these players at our positions of need?
So speaking of Pitts, there's so many things about him that intrigue me. The versatility obviously is something, right? Like the fact that this is a guy who lined up essentially at wide receiver on 36% of his snaps last year, either out wide. Yep. In the slot. So you call him a tight end, but he's really just like, we're changing the lingo this offseason to be who's the best pass catcher available because of Pitts.
Yeah.
Really, how does he compare to a guy like Kelsey, you know, who we all, maybe Kelsey and Kittle, we think of as the best tight ends in the league. How does he compare to those guys?
Well, he's certainly a lot better player coming out, or Travis Kelsey wouldn't have lasted in the third round. Travis has made himself a great football player, and he was a good player coming out. But you know, Kyle Pitts, to me, I think that calling him a big wideout is doing him a little bit of a disservice because he will block. He's more than a willing blocker. Doing guys like Jimmy Graham coming out of Miami, he truly was a pass catcher. I mean, to think Jimmy was going to put his hand in the dirt and really get into someone, I mean, it really hasn't happened over his career yet. But Kyle will. He'll do that. But he is. He's a big pass catcher. You're exactly right. We've kind of rephrased that this year in this year's draft. But just the mismatches, he's a nightmare. Like, what do you cover him with? He's shown he can beat anything. You know, just such a tremendous athlete. Probably since Vernon, we haven't seen one like him.
Do you think that teams factor in the value of a guy like that long-term when making this decision as well? You've mentioned the quarterback going up into getting back into the end of the first round to get that guy with the fifth year option. The fact that you can get a tight end who can do everything, but also be categorized as a tight end, means down the road, you can tag him at a tight end number, which is $7 million less than a wide receiver per year. You can pay him a tight end salary, which is way less. I looked at the numbers. There are 17 wide receivers that make more than Kittle and 19 that make more than Kelsey. So you're not only getting a playmaker, but you're getting a playmaker down the road, long-term, Hall of Fame capable, you know, type of guy at a discounted rate. Do you think that teams are thinking like that right now?
I think that's part of the discussion, but I think that his play and what he is as a player just puts him above those other guys. I mean, that's a really good point, Lindsay. That's a great point. But I think right now you're just assessing the player. But you get whoever the agent is, and I forget who's representing Kyle in this draft, but that is a fight that's coming. They are gonna try to reclassify him as a wide receiver in 4 or 5 years. There's no doubt about it.
Others have tried, you know, good luck with that. How do you view the wide receiver group at the top?
I mean, they're all good players, but it's what flavor do you want? I kind of went around that LSU pro day I was at asking different friends about what it is. And they're like, they're all different. So, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is a great player. You know, 6'1" and or 6 foot and change, 200 pounds and change, but plays bully ball, really strong, great at the catch point, really strong with the ball in his hands. I've heard some people make the Anquan Boldin comparison. In the tape, I can definitely see that. I'm not discounting that comparison, but you know, I was Bolden's group leader at the combine that year. And I told all those guys, don't ask me your 40 time until the whole workout's done, because that can usually mess a guy up if he ran slow. And I'll never forget Anquan's look in his face when I told him he ran 4.76. And Ja'Marr ran 4.38. And one of the scouts next to me had him 4.36. So we're talking about 0.4 faster. But so he's a great player, but he plays that game. He plays that big physical style. And then you've got Smitty, Devontae. I mean, he's probably the best all around in terms of releases and skill at the wide receiver position. And then Jalen Waddle is the most dynamic. And his returnability is the best I've seen since Devin Hester, because he can do both. He can do punts and kicks, and that's not usually the norm. And if you're a team that's willing, your head coach is willing to use him in that role, he's probably the best one, because he impacts two phases of the game. So trying not to give you a cop-out answer, but it really is whatever flavor fits your offense and what you need. But they're all great players.
Devontae Smith and his size has been talked about a lot, right? 170 pounds. How do you evaluate whether that will create problems for him in the NFL? Are you looking at NFL comps? Are there NFL comps? Like, how do you decide whether or not that's fine?
Yeah, he's truly going to be an outlier. And sometimes those guys are hard to fight for in a draft room. You'll get backed into a corner on the outlier, and some head coaches are just, and GMs are just steadfast against outliers. So, but I do think he will be that guy. You know, at 170 pounds, you look at the league he plays in, the most physical league in college football, in the SEC. They see more press coverage in that league than any other league by far. He hasn't had an issue with it. You look at him with the ball in his hands. You look at him in contested situations. He doesn't get muscled around. He bounces off. He bounces off contact. He's that wiry, strong guy. And the other thing I look to too is what Nick Saban's done with Devontae on special teams. So not only has he been a returner, but he's been a gunner on punt team. He's run down on kickoff team. He's been a vice on punt return team. There are some guys in Tuscaloosa thought he could have been a first round corner had they played him at corner. And you watch him as a vice on punt return, it's phenomenal. And the fact that Nick Saban was willing to play, you know, was the willingness to play him on special teams and risk a 170 pound player shows that Nick Saban had no concern about this guy's durability or his play strength. If he did, he wouldn't have played on him. And it shows you
that Nick Saban had a ton of other guys on the bench who he thought were pretty good that he was comfortable putting in. But yeah.
Well, I mean, Devontae played as a true freshman, so he was he caught the winning touchdown in the national championship game. And I think we can all agree Coach Saban's a pretty smart coach. So I don't think he would have done something reckless or dumb if he didn't believe that Devontae could handle it.
Totally. Point taken. So I'm listening to you evaluate these guys, and I'm wondering how conflicted you feel giving evaluation of players or picking favorites or anything like that. Having gone through the Senior Bowl process with all of them, I'd imagine you feel kind of connected to pretty much all the guys that came through Mobile, maybe some guys who didn't that you were in contact with in the buildup to that process.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I feel very connected. You know, we start evaluating them now. I'll start getting caught up after this year's draft through the summer, and I'll be posting stuff every day on these guys. And you do, you get connected. You spend a lot of time with them. But I never, it never gets in the way of my evaluation. I can't do that. I owe it to ESPN right now, who I'm working with to give an honest evaluation. So I don't let that cloud my judgment. Where it does come into play is with the schools. And you know, for Ohio State, I got to go back to Columbus next year and get players. I think we had 7 in the game this year. So there's relationships. There's relationships with coaches back to my time in scouting. Relationships with agents that represent these players. So I don't want to go on TV. You'll notice I'm very positive in a lot of my stuff that I put out on Twitter. I try to really stay away from any negativity, because those relationships are really important to the Senior Bowl, the agent stuff in the schools, that there's no reason. There's enough people out there blasting these players on what they can't do and being snarky about it. Like, I won't go down that road, but I will never sacrifice an evaluation just because a guy played in the Senior Bowl.
Yeah. Well, there are ways to be honest without highlighting the negative, right? Sure. Unless I was specifically asking you, like, what can that guy not do? Then that might put you in an uncomfortable position. But in terms of saying who are your favorites, you can really talk up one specific guy, and that's not negative about a different guy.
Right, right. No, I mean, there is definitely a balance there. And again, it's not like I'm out there promoting every single guy that came to Mobile, but the guys that I do feel like belong in that first and second round conversation, and maybe that aren't getting the hype in the media. And I'm hearing back from my friends with teams in the league. They're like, yeah, I've done that the past couple of days on a couple of players on social media, like trying to get their name out a little bit, because they're you know, in the second, third round mix in the league, maybe late first, but you're not seeing anything else much in the media. So I'm trying to get that stuff out there. But yeah, there's always ways you can be creative and still stay positive.
Who are some of those guys that you could maybe see going even in the first round that you're not seeing mocked there very often?
I think one guy that comes to mind right off the bat, Boogie Basham from Wake Forest. Great name, right, by the way?
That is a great football name.
He's like 6'3", 276 pounds. He leaves college with over 30 sacks. I think he had like 18 sacks over the last 2 years. He can rush from anywhere on the defensive line. Everyone needs pass rushers. And he ran 4.65. He ran faster than a bunch of wideouts in this draft. So we're talking about a 275-pound man that hits the quarterback, and he's that kind of athlete. And you don't see Boogie's name a lot in all these first rounds. And he should be in a year with it's a really thin interior defensive line class. That should help him as well. So I have a hard time seeing a guy like that not go in the first round. You're just not hearing a lot about him.
Do you think that that's just because the people who are doing the mock drafts on the media side aren't talking to the right people? How does something like that happen? Because it doesn't necessarily mean, like, just because we're not hearing his name doesn't mean that the league doesn't love him and that he's not a sure bet to go high in the draft, right?
Right. I don't know how it happens, because a guy like Boogie, again, everything lined up, like the size, the speed, the production. I mean, everything kind of lends itself to being a first round pick. So I don't know why they're being left out. But it's funny when I post some of this stuff, and then I get texts from guys in the league, and they're like, "Man, why'd you post about that guy?"
That was my secret.
That was our secret. But no, it's interesting that you know, it just feels like there's a group of players every year that kind of get pushed, and that's the narrative, that the train goes down the track on a certain group of players. So, but the draft is more than one round. We seem to always focus on the first round.
Totally,
but to me,
I
love day three the best. Day three is the scout's day. That's where you make your team. That's where you build your team.
That's where you know all the guys that none of us know.
But that, you know, when you're building a football team, that's where you build your football team. That's where you get your cheap labor. That's where you get a Richard Sherman on a round five contract and Cam Chancellor and Doug Baldwin undrafted. That's how Seattle built those teams with those later round guys. So so that's part of it. But then as a scout also, that's how you make your name. I mean, that's how, when you're pounding the table for a guy in the fifth round and he ends up being a player like Richard Sherman. I mean, that wasn't me in Seattle. I wasn't in Seattle at the time when they picked him, but that's how you make your name, and that's how you move up in the profession. So I love day three. I know we all get caught up in round one, but the later we go in the draft, the more I like it.
Yeah. Well, if you're like the Rams, that's when you start drafting. Right. Not a lot of talk about the interior defensive linemen in this year's class, but I do think that Christian Barmore, is that how you say his name?
Yep.
Is an interesting guy. I've seen several mock drafts that do not have him going in the first round. PFF's most recent mock by Sam Monson does have him going 15th, though. And he did get an invitation to attend the draft in person. And this is where I'm going with this question. What do you read into that? Because I know that Gil Brandt for a while was involved in who got invited to attend the draft. And that was usually linked to what he was hearing about where people were going to go, wanting to get a variety of people there. But he told a story about Aaron Rodgers, like he didn't want somebody sitting in the green room and waiting and being embarrassed. And so they tried to avoid that type of a situation. And so I'm wondering what you know about how those choices get made and what you think we can read into who gets invited and who doesn't.
I'm not sure exactly how it happens, but I think you can read into it. Like you said, I don't think that the league has a vested interest in putting any of these guys out there and embarrassing their players. So I think they safely go with guys between their communications with the 32 teams. I think they come up with a pretty tight list of who's going to go. And I think that bodes very well for Christian Barmore. Again, I think he's a guy that is very, very talented. His play was a little up and down, but there were some games, the SEC championship game against Florida, all through the college football playoff, those two games. I mean, you could make a case he was the best player on the field in a couple of those games. I mean, he was very, very disruptive in a thin interior D line class. He can get to the quarterback. He's big and stout against the run. He really has all the tools. I've talked to a couple of teams that think he's one of the top 15 players in the draft. And again, I didn't see Sam put that in his latest mock draft, but you weren't seeing Christian's name a lot. And I think that once that got released, that the NFL had invited Christian to Cleveland, that was a pretty clear indication of where the teams have Christian on their boards.
Similar question with regard to the invitation process, but about the Senior Bowl. How do you decide who gets an invitation and who doesn't get an invitation? Is it linked to things that you're hearing from people around the league about questions that they have about players who they would like to see in Mobile for a week? Are you having those types of conversations with people? And is that part of the process?
Yeah, absolutely. A big part of the process. You know, we have our own scouting staff. Since this is my third, this just finished up my third game cycle going on year four. We didn't have a full staff this year because of COVID. We couldn't, you know, you really couldn't have scouts at games this year. They had to sit in the stands. We like to do a lot of our work on the field pregame, like reporters like to do, talking to coaches and getting background information. But we're going to go back to that. We fired all guys that have been scouts in the NFL the first couple of years. And those guys are all over the country. They get film. We download film from the NFL. They watch the tape. They write the reports. They go to games. So we do this just like an NFL team would. And so we do that all the way through the summer and through the fall, set our board. Really, like, the first round of invites are pretty easy guys for us. They usually fall in that, you know, first three round area. And then for the second round of invites, it's a formal process. We get on the phone with over half the league. This year, I think it was 16 or 17 teams. And we just go position by position and say quarterback, say we've invited four and we've got two spots left. You know, I'll present, okay, here's the next two we would like to invite. Do those guys make sense for you? Or is there someone from outside of those two? Is there someone else? Or on the offensive line, say we've invited 14 and we've got six spots left. And I'm like, okay, here are our next six to eight. Is there a small school guy that we just haven't seen yet? And we want to give the 32 teams input because these rosters are for them. This is for their evaluations. And so we really lean on them heavily for a lot of those invites you see coming through in December. Again, and also after the teams get picked, like, we'll have guys when they announce the coaching staff. So this year it was Miami and Carolina. When we lose players, you know, a bowl game injury or a training injury, like Vandy's Dio Odiengbo, who's one of the best interior D linemen from Vandy this year, he popped his Achilles the week before the game. So we went to the coaching staffs of the two teams and just relied on them. Who do you want us to bring? You know, you guys are in place now. You're the coaching staffs. Who do you want to coach?
In terms of position or in terms of specific people?
If we had to replace a D lineman in that case, we went, okay, which D lineman up do you want? Like, here's our next three or four. Do you want one of those three or four? Is there someone on your board that's higher that you'd like us to bring? So it's a collaborative thing. And again, it's a huge part. And we owe it to the NFL to bring the guys they want to see. And we like the fact that we do our own work, but we don't have the ego to think that we have all the answers. I mean, we need their help.
Well, I've said this before during Senior Bowl week. I said it quite a bit. That Senior Bowl week's like my favorite one. I keep saying this about various things. It's one of my favorite weeks on the calendar. And I have said a lot, like, I would kind of pick, I mean, there are pros to going to Super Bowl. Obviously, you know, that's the big game and you want to be a big part of that. But just from like the football nerd standpoint, Senior Bowl week is like a more fun week for me than Super Bowl week, because just the ability to be in one place with the different coaches and scouts and general managers. And that's all. It's not about going to parties or anything like that. It's just like from a content standpoint, it's a dream. I freaking love it. I love going over to Veet's at the end of the night and, you know, catching all of the Mayock rapping, Rapper's Delight in front of everybody, whatever it is that he does. It's just such a fun week. And I think you've done such a good job with it. So.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. It means everything. We love hearing that. And it is a great week. You know, we've never really marketed our game to the fans and have really tried to do that, to get that out to the fans. This is a great week. You get so close to these players. You can have interactions with them. The NFL is here. Like you said, everyone's here. You can pop into bars behind me on Dolphin Street and there'll be three head coaches at the bar, you know, drinking beers together. And it's just, the whole NFL to censor. And then you got all the great media people like yourself down here. And it's a great place to connect. It's a great place to network. It's really a fun weekend. You say you didn't come down here to party. We're trying to add that. You know, we had a concert pre-COVID. We had a concert 2 years ago where we had 20,000 people downtown Mobile with the Revivalists. They put on an incredible show, this band down in New Orleans. So we're trying to get to there. We had a Mardi Gras parade with our players 2 years ago, which all that stuff's coming back this year. So we're trying to build out the party element for you. But just the football nuts and bolts stuff is, you can't beat it.
Oh, you really can't. Yeah. So if you're not a nerd like me and you don't want to go study tape in your room, then yes, there are fun aspects of going down to Mobile for that week as well. Last question for you about the draft. They all kind of revolve around pivot points, right? Like, are there pivot points? And I'll go back to the first round. And I know I'm sorry for talking about the first round. I know the later rounds are more interesting for you, but just no, in terms of talking about names that the most people actually know. What do you see as the pivot points in that first round that you'll be really interested to see if this goes in this direction, this can change everything?
Yeah, just where I'm always interested where the runs happen. You know, we talked about this being a very deep offensive line class. Like, does that run? It's going to start pretty soon with Penei Sewell and Slater from Northwestern. I think that's going to happen. But then does it come off in succession? Where do the running backs go? Where does Najee Harris and Travis Etienne and Javonte Williams go? You know, because then there's probably going to be a little run there. Where does the wideout thing go? You know, we talked about the big three. Those guys are all up there. But then you got the Elijah Moores, the Kadarius Tonys, the Rondell Moores, the Nico Collins. Like, where does that group go? So there's depth at a lot of positions. And where do those runs happen? And where can you get the value? That's the stuff I'm interested in.
Yeah, and the Bengals could set it off in a bunch of different directions, right? Whether they go protection or pass catcher, please go protection, whatever. That's just my own personal opinion. Jim Nagy, thank you so much for taking the time to walk us through all of this today. This has been fun for me.
No, Lindsay, it's been great. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Good stuff. And you can follow Jim on Twitter. And he's a great informational follow, by the way, @JimNagy_SB. And then go look into those Senior Bowl tickets for next year. It really is a great week. I highly recommend it. And we'll be back on Friday with more on the draft and a pass-catching deep dive with a guy who knows what he's talking about in that department. Also might have some thoughts on Aaron Rodgers' run as guest Jeopardy host. So there's a clue about who it is, kind of, I guess. Have a great week. We'll see you Friday.